Welcome to the 8th episode of the Jamie Delaney Plant-Based Wellness Podcast. I'm your host, Jamie Delaney. I'm a plant-based cardiologist and endurance athlete living in Southwest Florida. I've started this podcast to educate and entertain listeners on the health benefits of an active plant-based lifestyle. I believe most health problems can be solved through a plant-based diet. I'd also consider myself an ethical vegan. I wasn't raised this way. I grew up in West Virginia. My family raised their own animals for meat to eat. They also had very large gardens. I hunted as a child. But over time, and especially after reading Diet for a New America, I've come to believe that a more compassionate way of living is without animals and animal products. I don't consider myself much different from any plant-based or vegan people out there. I think most people have changed over their lives. There are very few that started out as purely vegan. Sometimes it seems as though people have to be in one camp or the other. Either they're plant-based and they don't want to talk about the animal issues, or they're vegan and they don't want to talk about the health benefits of a plant-based diet. I don't believe that we have to be in one camp or the other, and I think that both camps would benefit from maybe being a little bit more understanding of each other. I feel that if my grandmother were alive today, she would see the benefits of a plant-based diet and would gladly eat from her garden and give up animals for food, especially if she thought that that would benefit the health of her family. I recently heard an interview with Dr. Michael Clapper from True North Health describing the dairy industry and the consumption of cow's milk. He called it the life fluid that a cow gives to her young calf to grow a calf to be 400 pounds very quickly. It was not meant to grow animals, or it wasn't meant to grow humans to 400 pounds very quickly. And he states that no matter how you drink it, freeze it, ferment it, it's still the life fluid that was meant to be for a calf. And it does the human body no good whatsoever. And there have been recent studies come out, again, showing the harmful benefits of cow's milk with the insulin-like growth factors, the inflammatory factors, the pesticides, the hormones, and the bad effects that it has on humans. A lot of people find dairy and cheese the hardest thing to give up, and they kind of justify it that they feel that at least they're not killing an animal to get to the milk. But if you really look at the dairy industry, it's probably one of the cruelest when it comes to the treatment of the cows and their calves, taking away the calf shortly after birth, repeatedly inseminating the cows, and having them live a life basically standing just to produce milk for human consumption and not what their milk was meant for, which was calves. It's amazing that we cling to such a toxic substance, even though we know that it's not good for us. I guess it's not much different than clinging to cigarettes. It doesn't help that there's so many campaigns out there that tell you that milk makes your bones strong, when in fact more fractures occur in people that are milk and dairy consumers. My guest today is Juliana Hever. She is a registered dietitian as well as a personal trainer. She's written The Complete Idiot's Guide to Plant-Based Nutrition. She also has a new book to be released in December called The Vegetarian Diet, The New and Improved Mediterranean Eating Plan. It's a very interesting book on how the Mediterranean diet has changed into more of a plant-based diet. You know, there's a lot of studies, or a lot of people will cling to, well, I eat the Mediterranean diet as far as for being heart healthy. Most of that data was taken back when it was just after the war, when there was very, very little meat consumption. And olive oil wasn't doused in everything as far, you know, it was very limited use. And again, people were much more active and ate a predominantly plant-based diet. The other studies that have shown some benefit to a Mediterranean diet have basically compared it to the standard American diet, where people are eating terribly, and then if you take out some of the processed food, of course, they're going to do better than nothing, but it's certainly never been shown to reverse disease. So this improvement on the Mediterranean diet, the vegetarian, vegetarian diet, is a great new novel approach. Juliana has a very dynamic personality, as you'll see. She's appeared on the Dr. Oz show as well as Maria Osmond show. She also had a show of her own, What Would Juliana Do? Her cookbook is an excellent guide on how to do low-oil plant-based cooking. She also, during the interview, shares some of her own struggles with her family. Her husband is not completely plant-based. He actually is a physician that becomes 100% plant-based before he gets his blood work done. Her kids are not 100% plant-based, basically because she's giving them the choice. They go to public school, they interact with their friends, she tries to provide them plant-based options, but even in somebody like her, who is an ethical vegan and completely plant-based, it's not a completely easy thing to do for your family, and it takes some creativity, so that she'll share some of that with us. So I hope you enjoy the interview and her insights into plant-based nutrition and a vegan lifestyle. Welcome, Juliana Hever. It's my pleasure to get some time to speak with you. I was first wowed by your TED Talk. It was so concise and to the point of the beauty and need for plant-based nutrition education. I also have purchased and read your complete Idiot's Guide to Plant-Based Nutrition, and I'm on pre-order for the vegetarian one.
That's hard to say. Thank you so much.
So tell me a little bit. I know you have your master's in nutritional science. You got your undergrad in what?
Actually, in acting. I was pre-med and theater major, which is kind of a random combination, right?
Well, it's paid off because you present yourself quite well in your talk. So, you know, everything works out for a reason, correct?
Oh, first of all, thank you so much for saying that. I really appreciate it. And yes, it is really weird how stuff always ends up the way it was supposed to be, even though you don't know at the time. So yes, absolutely.
So a master's in nutrition science. And tell me a little bit about that, because, you know, you're plant-based now. When did the transition to plant-based become? Because I know not a lot of programs besides the Loma Linda program have much to do with plant-based nutrition.
Exactly. In fact, I'm wondering if there are any others. I don't know. I'm not up to date on what's out there now. But I was not quite there yet when I was in grad school. This was many, many years ago. And I had always been interested in it. I had started, you know, with all the books like John Robbins' Diet for a New America and Diet for a Small Planet. And I'd always understood the more environmental and the health reasons to not eat animals. And I was very interested in studying it at a very young age, but I had no support. That was before, you know, online and before, you know, you have Facebook where you can communicate and books. And it was just, there wasn't a lot of information available, but I didn't have access to anyone that I could really kind of, you know, have help and support from. So my parents persuaded me to go back to eating the regular standard American diet out of, you know, the fear for not getting enough protein and iron and the stuff that we still tragically hear on a daily basis. But always felt that that was absolutely the truth. And I kept researching it. So in graduate school, I did the standard, you know, but I mean, really most of what we learn is what you learned pre-med is like chemistry and biochem and micro and, you know, basic science courses that really don't have an influence quite in the food industry yet. But then of course there were my nutrition classes where my forms that were, they were advising me to, you know, make sure my patients get 3 glasses of dairy a day was clearly, you know, annoted. I was the bottom in small print that page was sponsored by the Dairy Council. And, you know, the education is influenced very much so by the food industry in the nutrition courses. But it doesn't matter. I got through it. I knew it was wrong. I saw the bias, you know, integrated throughout my education. But what I came away with was the skills to analyze the information from an objective perspective. And it wasn't until after I had all of those those resources and just understanding of how science works, that I was able to go back into the literature, look at the primary articles, and really dig deeper and find that, yes, you can get all of your nutrients from plants, and that, yes, you can be healthier eating a plant-based diet. And, of course, now in the last few years, we're building up some amazing research just showing how true it is.
Great. Now, and you also are a personal trainer. So how did your practice evolve? I mean, did you do some hospital work after you finished, or did you go directly into private practice consulting type deal? How did that go?
Well, I was a personal trainer first. I was a personal trainer while I was an actress, and I was that's how I ended up. It's such a circuitous route. So I was personal training, you know, paying the bills, loved my job, loved training. I'd do in-home, go to people's homes, 6 a.m. clients every day, and then I would go to school in the afternoon. Oh, no, and so before that, when I was finishing up undergrad, that's when, you know, people started asking me nutrition questions, and I'd always been really interested and always been studying nutrition, but I didn't want to just give advice without knowing why I was saying what I said. You know, like, you know, you can memorize a chapter in the personal training handbook on nutrition, or you can really go and study the roots and find out exactly why you're saying what you're saying. So I was inspired right away to enroll in graduate school. And so I basically did personal training to pay for my way, you know, pay my bills while I was in grad school. And I loved it too, but I started integrating the nutrition as I learned it more and more and felt comfortable with what I was recommending. And I still keep my personal training certification up because I do give fitness advice. Like, I do see clients now more nutritionally, but I always integrate fitness because it's a crucial part of a healthy lifestyle. So I feel like I keep on top of all the fitness information so that I can help my clients not only change their diets, but, you know, outline a workout for them. So I don't actually go and train them anymore, but I do recommend, like, I prescribe fitness and I prescribe types of fitness and, you know, frequency and all the other stuff. So it's definitely, they're a beautiful combination together.
Yes, absolutely. It is great that you prescribe most, because I'm sitting here looking at, I told you earlier that I'm an endurance athlete, and so you're always trying to tweak your performances, and especially in triathlon, nutrition we call the fourth discipline, because, you know, when that goes awry, or in a marathon, when the nutrition goes awry, then everything ceases. And looking at the leading sports nutrition guide, I just opened up one, and it said, you know, protein sources, beans are not listed. It's you know, fish, lobster, you know, that's low fat, the good stuff, and then cheese, you know, cottage cheese and lean milk, and it's so discouraging, you know. Since some athletes are starting to be, you know, plant based, and more is coming out, Scott Jurek, and of course Rich Roll, you know, is getting the word out. It's much better, but it's so frustrating, you know, to finish an event and see people eating cheese pizza and donuts and things like that. And I think it's wonderful that more and more people are doing endurance events, but, you know, they don't seem to be trimming down because I think the nutrition is so poor. So that you're definitely right. They definitely go hand in hand. And, you know, on the other aspect of things, I tell my patients, you know, I could sit you in a chair and we could make you lose weight with that, because they'll say, oh, you know, I can't exercise. And it's like, you know, that's not where it's going to happen. It's your nutrition, you know.
Oh, yeah. No, I know. I think that's such a common misunderstanding, that you can exercise off a bad diet, you know, and you can compensate by just exercising more or harder or whatever. But really, you're right. I don't even think it's the fourth discipline. It should be one of the first disciplines, because, you know, you are what you eat, and you perform the way you eat. You recover based on what nutrients are going through your body and supplying your muscles and supplying your, you know, recovery, because exercise is so hard on the body. I mean, it's so wonderful for the body, but it's also really a little bit traumatic with all the free radicals, and it's a very intensive process for the body. And when you could provide it with all these wonderful antioxidants and, you know, phytochemical rich diet, you're supporting your exercise and taking it to a whole new level. Like, that's how we should be thinking about it. They work together like yin and yang. Like, you need one to have the other, and vice versa. It's also, the exercise helps get the food, you know, circulating through the body appropriately. It helps with digestion. It's just such a wonderful, like, they're both so important. But yeah, you could sit still and lose weight. You know, you could be completely sedentary, and the diet is going to be, you know, I think it's like 99% of weight loss and weight management is what you eat. So people kind of often forget that.
do you advise patients on endurance athletic as far as like fueling during events, you know, like more natural foods as opposed to some of the processed food, dates, bananas? I even had an exercise, actually a triathlete talk to me about eating raw sweet potatoes. Have you ever heard about that?
Oh, no, I haven't heard raw sweet potatoes, but I've heard some interesting things. And absolutely, I do advise on pre, during, and post events because it's crucial, right? Like you want to have enough fuel, but you don't want to get crampy. You want to have enough electrolytes, but you don't want to have too much water. Like there's so many little nitpicky things that need to be kind of honed in to have an effective performance and even perhaps more importantly, an effective recovery.
Very good. I had to laugh when I saw, I think I saw on Veg Source where you talked about your compassion for animals and reading John Robbins' book, and that was the exact book that made me become a vegan several years ago. You know, it was his words are, you know, and I love hearing every interview with him as well. He's such a soft-spoken yet influential type person.
Oh, he's amazing. I know I was the first time I saw him speak at Veg Source. Yeah, Oh, that was what, like 5-6 years ago? I don't remember when it was, but I remember getting up to the mic because I know he had changed so much of my life. And I remember going up to the mic and I was shaking. I was so nervous and I just started crying because I just told him how he makes me want to be a better person. And he's the reason. So it's like the biggest honor in the world that he endorsed like my first book and now this. He said, I think he endorsed all three of my books, which to me was like truly the biggest honor of all because it was like, he's the reason that I took this path and so many others have taken the path. And he's such a humble, beautiful soul. And I'm just feel so honored to have met him a few times and I love him.
Getting back to some of your books. I know you talk about, you know, a brown rice tortilla. Do you buy those or you make those?
Oh, I buy what I can. I'm a busy working mom, so I'm all for people that can make stuff from scratch, and I do what I can to make from scratch, like beans and whatnot, but if, you know, I use like that, I buy the brown rice tortillas.
People that are having trouble getting their cholesterol down that, you know, are, you know, say that they're of normal weight, so they, you know they're not overeating so much, but they just can't get their cholesterol down. How much of a role do you think tofu plays in driving cholesterol through, you know, fat and it can being converted in the liver to cholesterol or other things? You know, what would you look at to try to say, you know, to really, someone says, I am eating like the perfect diet. I don't know what the cause is. You know, are there any things that you, you know, the last thing you look at to make sure that, you know, you've covered all the bases?
Oh, yeah. Well, for sure, no matter, everyone says they eat great. I see that. Oh, I have a perfect diet. I can't figure out what's wrong. And it's not that they're trying to mislead me because they're coming to me for help, but it's more of a misunderstanding because there's so much misinformation out there and it's so confusing and people just don't know. And so that's why I make everyone that wants to work with me, I make them give me a very detailed food journal and then I come through it really carefully. And there's always something that pops up. There's always a reason for something. Specifically with cholesterol, you know, either if they're healthy weight, I would look for, I mean, honestly, people that cut out the oil, it makes a huge difference. That's a last thing that a lot of people don't realize. But if you cut out oil and just eat your fats from whole sources, I think that makes a significant difference. I think soy is known to reduce cholesterol. So soy would be a healthy food just because it's a little higher in fat. It's got the good kinds of fat. And I would never think soy would be something that would encourage a high cholesterol level, and I haven't seen that. I see more oil or more sometimes fried foods, you know, a little bit of extra french fries, or, you know, just not, or especially, honestly, the first thing that pops up is the animal products. A lot of times, the biggest, most influential diet change is cutting out the animal products. It's humongous. Like, the impact on the cholesterol is almost immediate, within days. And if someone's already got the perfect diet, then their cholesterol is usually going down. You know, there are the exceptions of the people that have a really strong genetic predisposition. But, I mean, you're a cardiologist. You could tell me, what is that, like 1% of people that have high cholesterol is due to genetics? Very low. Do you know the number?
It is. It's very low. It's, you know, it's certainly less than 5%. You know, and I just, you know, there's a few people, patients that I have that, you know, like I grill them, I feel like, you know, they're on the witness stand and I, you know, this and this, and of course, you know, the oil, I agree with you, is huge. And I think The other thing is when people eat, go out to dinner, they don't realize how often they go out to dinner or that they pick up food or things like that. And I think that the hidden oil in those things, you know, even though, you know, the places will say, oh, we don't, but that, you know, they do.
Oh, totally. Yeah, exactly. And you could say 20 times, please, no oil, no oil. Or even just light on the oil. And there's just, it's impossible to avoid oil when you go out. And that's exactly a good point, too, because people don't realize what they're eating, which is why I think one of the most effective tools, not only for analysis for our purposes, but for the person doing it, is the food journal. Because everyone that does their food journal, which they have to do to work with me, they go, oh, my gosh, this is the best tool ever because I didn't realize I had a bite here, I had a bite there, and it adds up. Or on the contrary, they'll be like, oh, I knew I had to write it down, so I didn't have what I would have had. So I think that just being aware of what we're really eating, that's why when people say they eat a perfect diet, I'm like, okay, that's great, but let me just see exactly what that means. And it's a very subjective way to call it a diet. You know, like, it's all subjective until you really look at it.
Most of the time, it doesn't take me any more than, so what did you have for dinner last night?
Yeah, right.
And then the next thing they say is, but I never do that.
right, yeah, totally. I get that all the time. Oh, my gosh, it's so funny. I mean, gosh, you know, we're all human. I mean, I love French fries, too. And so it's just a matter of, like, you know, and here's the thing that I've come to conclude after 20 years doing this, really, is that I will not work with anyone. Finally, I finally decided I will not work with anyone where I need to convince them to make a difference. Like, they need to want authentically, internally, to make a change, or I'm not going to be able to help them. You can't force someone to make a change. It has to come from within.
Unfortunately, the people that you turn away, those are the people that are in my door.
Right. But you know what? The people that are in your door, when they see what's happening, that's a lot of the times when they go, oh, okay, they get scared. And that's when they're ready to make the change because they're faced with a serious complication, a serious potential life problem.
You know, I was impressed with, you know, I saw the part about the animal compassion. And I've had this discussion, you know, there are what we call, you know, some people refer to themselves as plant-based. Some people refer to themselves as vegans. And, you know, the plant-based people are afraid to be labeled as a vegan, and the vegan people, you know, want to, you know, be known for their animal activism. But it seems like both groups could benefit from each other. I think that you stand a better chance of staying plant-based if there is some ethical reason and compassionate reason to stay plant-based. It helps. And I also think that perhaps the vegans people on that side of the fence might get their message across more if they looked healthier or ate healthier, you know, would maybe, you know, have a better image as well. What do you think on that?
Oh, I think you're 100% spot on. And I'm always kind of, you know, like, literally putting my toes on both sides of that because I'm proudly vegan. I talk about being vegan. I'm a very strong animal activist. But, you know, I'm also a dietitian, and my profession is the health benefits. And when I first went in this, I didn't want to believe that. Someone that's really profound, has made a profound influence in my life, you know, Ginny Messina, as a dietitian, and she had said that what you said, that it has to come from that ethical perspective. I think she's the first one that said that to me. But when I first heard that, I was like, no, people want to do it for their health, and I don't believe it. But my goodness, what I've learned in the last few years is there is no question that if you don't have the ethical belief system as part of it, it's absolutely likely that you'll either jump back and forth or you won't stick to it as much. Because, like, for me personally, if someone told me you will die if you don't eat an animal product because you should be healthy, I wouldn't be able to eat the animal product. Now, that suffice that to say, that is the ethical part of it. But on the other hand, I know that that's not true because I know that people do much better without animal products, so I can't imagine that would ever happen. But the whole point is that I see both sides of this argument, and I think that you're right because there's all these, like, these bloggers recently that have become ex-vegan because they didn't feel good, and they had to start eating animals or all this stuff. And nobody, you know, I don't know what their individual stories are, kind of unique, but they go back to eating animal products. And I can't even fathom going back to eating an animal product, and I think that's because I see it as an animal and not food. And I it's very interesting. And I think that, like what you said on the other part of that, is animal rights activists will be more effective when they are as healthy as possible. And I highly recommend, and I talk to a lot of vegan activists to, you know, make sure that they're emphasizing eating healthy, because it's easy to be a junk food vegan now. Now there's so much delicious junk food vegan options out there that you could absolutely, you know, end up eating that way, and that's not good, and that's not going to be good for veganism, which is the goal of these animal rights activists. So yeah, it's an interesting debate.
Yeah, I know, you know, when I first did the whole John Robbins book, and you know, I declared myself vegan and my family said I was nuts, and it gradually I fell off, you know, I mean, I slipped back, and you know, it wasn't until, you know, I declared the house, you know, basically my mom got sick, we all lived together, you know, I started doing all the cooking, it's like we're vegan now. And then it seemed like when we got past the first set of holidays, when we, you know, we had family over and we cooked vegan and nobody died and nobody left and they all came back, you know, I mean, it was like, it's okay.
Yes, I know what you mean. And I went through years of that with my family, and now I've gotten to the point now, because it's been a while, where people come over and they actually, because I don't want any animal products in my house. So it was like, at first they're like, what are we going to make? How are we going to eat? How are we going to survive? Like you said. But the fun thing is I make a huge spread. Like I make tons of really good, like my favorite recipes, and nobody, they're not completely stuffed and having loved their food and going, oh, wow, that was all vegan, you know, and no oil. And they think, what are you probably going to eat? So I think that if you could win people over with their stomach, that's another really inspiring way to encourage people.
Yeah, I think you're great. So your house and your children have been vegan from the get-go?
No, my house has been, but my husband is vegetarian, so we have like a mixed marriage. He's lacto-ovo-vegetarian, but he's really leans towards the vegan side. And I always tell the story because I think it's very telling that he's a doctor, so he and we're very competitive, so we both get our cholesterol check, you know, our labs, just the annual labs, just to keep on top of things. And when he's getting ready for his, he'll go like 2-3 weeks vegan and eat like me, because he knows that it's healthier, and he's trying to win with because I have a better cholesterol than me, but he hasn't won. But that proves the point, right, that he knows that it's most effective. But no, and the kids, it's very hard. I mean, that's the part that kills me, is that I care more about my kids than anyone on this planet, and I care more about what they eat than anyone on this planet. But it's a tough road at home. That's actually not as easy as people think it is.
Well, I just gave a talk and presentation at our local or our county school district's health fair. It was for the teachers and administrators, and I got to meet the culinary chef teacher. And, you know, we were talking, and I said, you know, what a perfect place. He, you know, had seen Forks Over Knives, and he just wasn't quite there. And, you know, a little bit of this low-carb Atkin type thing, you know, you could tell that he had lost weight kind of doing that. And I was trying, you know, I spoke, and we had some different salads, and, you know, I had all the books out, and I think that, you know, I may get to speak at, you know, one of their classes and perhaps, you know, have some more dialogue with him, because I think that's probably where it needs to take place. If the kids learn to cook some plant-based vegan meals and it's good and they can bring it home, or they learn about some healthy choices, or even the teachers learn healthy choices, you know, I think that's where it is.
It is. It's a community thing. I think the kid thing is the hardest thing in the world, because there's so much bad influence, really terrible influence from, like, in my kids' cafeteria, there are pictures of the, you know, buff athlete, famous athlete and celebrity with the milk mustache, and it's just awful. It's so awful. And there's always parties and pizza parties and candy for this, you know, there's just always, you know, really, it's just so available, and it's almost like you're a mean mom if you don't let your kids have that junk. And I go to war on this with a lot of people, and people, it's horrible. It's honestly the hardest thing I've ever had to do in my entire life, is try to get my kids to eat healthy.
Well,
in this world.
I don't know if you've ever listened to Main Street Vegan, but they had, and I can't remember her first name, but
Victoria?
No, well, yeah, that's her, but she interviewed Joel Fuhrman's daughter, who just wrote a cookbook.
Talia.
And she spoke about when she was in her rebellious, you know, junior high school years, hiding under the bed with cookies and things, and I thought it was hysterical, you know, I mean, and then she kind of came to the ethical part of it, you know, and she came around, but she's like, it, you know, it wasn't always pleasant in their household, you know, being sugar, oil, and salt free when the rest of the world were having cookies and cupcakes. So
I know. She's my friend. Actually, I wrote the foreword for that book because it was such a sweet story of, imagine growing up like that. I went to their home actually. When I did a documentary called To Your Health a few years ago, like 2010, and I think Todd was in college at the time, but I met her after. But I was at their home, you know, and Dr. Furman and his wife, who I love them. They're such amazing people. He's like whipping up a dressing, and you know, and the kids are just, their little one was there, and they're just like, that's just what they eat. And I was thinking, God, that's so cool. And when I saw Dr. Furman at a conference, I'm like, you know, this is the biggest challenge of my life is to get my kids to eat this way. What are your secrets? And I'll never forget, he said, you know what I do? What he did with his kids growing up is that he would have them, you know, he would have some spinach or something, and his son would say, for instance, oh, I want to have that spinach, and he said, nope, you can't have that spinach because I need all this muscle. I need to be really super strong, and I'm gonna eat all this spinach. And then the kid would be like, no, I really want the spinach. And he'd be like, no, you can't have the spinach. It's all mine. And then he'd say, oh, please, dad, or something like that. And then he would give it to him and like make him like feel excited about it. And he could give me all these really fun tips to kind of make it fun. I'm thinking, God, I wish I could do that. I tried it, all that stuff with my kids. It works sometimes, but I think it's so cool that Talia grew up like that, and she's so passionate about it too. So it's really neat that she's, you know, out there now and talking about it.
Yeah, it was a really cute interview. Yeah, the milk thing, you know, post the milk sponsor. I just wish that, you know, I guess a dairy industry owns, there's a dairy company that owns Silk. I wish they would get involved in some of these athletic events because, you know, the milk sponsor is the chocolate milk thing is just drives me absolutely insane.
Oh, that it's a sports drink. Oh my gosh, it's like the best sports drink. That's that campaign. Is that the campaign you're talking about?
Yes. That they just won a part of the $2 billion sports drink industry. So, but yeah, it's very frustrating. It really is. I've never been so ill as having dairy before a marathon and then running the marathon. And I mean, if that, you know, and it's like, I want to ask all these professional athletes, you know, did you really drink that stuff post-workout? And did you know that's why you were doubled over a couple hours later? You know?
Oh, I know, right? The amazing thing that I've seen, and one of my favorite things, is that when I start with someone that's completely eating, either not even standard American diet, but like the healthy, quote unquote, healthy version of it, like the what I used to teach, the high protein and veggie diet, you know, like the, you know, the chicken breast and egg whites and veggies. It's pretty much, I guess, a paleo diet now, they call it. That's pretty much what I used to teach. But now I take people like that and I say, try this. Just try it. Because they're, you know, they've got health problems. And the stuff I've seen from people just taking, especially just the dairy out, is extraordinary. Like stuff you would never think. You know, their skin clears up. Like I've had people with lifelong asthma, lifelong eczema. Within days, that stuff clears up and they don't need their inhaler. It's just, it's amazing. People don't even realize. And yeah, especially in the fitness world where, wow, just, and, oh, I love those, like those bodybuilders. Like, I don't know if you're familiar with, because you're more in the endurance world, but like Vegan Muscle and Fitness, and do you know them, and veganbodybuilding.com?
Yes.
So these two, yeah. And I love that you could, yeah, they're great because you see these guys are building huge muscles and they're doing it with completely just with plants. And so we don't need any of that other junk.
And then the other frustrating part for me, you know, I'm trying to work with the hospitals. Just one of the hospitals just started a bypass program, and literally the first patient on his first meal was steak with gravy on it. And I actually, you know, had a tantrum in the middle of the intensive care unit. It's like, who gave this man this steak? And the other thing that they're doing is, and it's crazy, there's a stuff, have you ever heard of this stuff called ProSource?
Is it one of those drinks?
ProSource comes in a little container like a ketchup cup, and it's 15 grams, you know, from the, you know, like in a little ketchup container, and it's collagen and whey protein. And it's like, oh my God, you're giving this to intensive care unit patients. Because obviously.
Just remember the cardiac diet? You know, when I was, so you asked me before, I never answered, that I did a lot of rotations in the hospital. I spent a lot of time in the hospital, in the schools, mostly in the hospital, because I really thought I wanted to do clinical nutrition. But, oh my gosh, so there's their cardiac diet, and then there's the renal diet, and there's the diabetic diet. But the cardiac diet was caffeine-free coffee, but it was still like Jell-O and, you know, the chicken and steak. I mean, just, it's just like a heart attack on a plate, and we're giving that to the heart patients. It's just absurd. absurd. And what's in the cafeterias at hospitals.
Well, yeah, the nurses' stations have, big bowls of candy, and then, and then people are bringing things in, and then they don't have any good choices in the cafeteria, so, they really don't stand a chance. It's very difficult. The other thing that I wanted to... I just lost my train of thought just a little bit because I had a dog bark. But
I heard that. That's so cute. That's a good reason.
Yes, I have a dog-cat confrontation going on around me right now. So,
I was doing an interview yesterday, and my dog threw up, and it was a live radio interview, and he was, throwing up, and I was having to keep going. It's crazy. I can relate.
Yes, just hold your feet up and go on. No, if someone were going into the nutrition field and they wanted to be plant-based, what kind of recommendations, you seem to have a nice practice as far as, a consultative practice? Any recommendations for people like that?
Yeah, I get an email or two every single day asking how to do this kind of nutrition. And here's my answer always. I don't recommend those trade school type of things. I recommend getting the scientific background that is crucial to understanding the science behind nutrition, the science behind what you're saying, the counseling skills, the hospital skills, the medical and nutrition therapy skills. That stuff is so, you have to have that. There's so much more to being a dietitian than just kind of, memorizing some facts in a book or a weekend course and the teaching, because anyone could be a nutritionist, and anyone could call themselves that. And I think that's a political issue we need to adjust, because I don't think that's safe for a lot of patients. But that being said, I recommend someone sign up, actually become a registered dietitian. Yes, if you can, find Loma Linda, obviously. But someone wrote me yesterday, and I don't know if they have an internship program. I know they have a nutrition program, but I don't know if they have an internship. But it doesn't matter. I think if you just get the education no matter where you are, and then once you have that degree and that knowledge and the skills, you can do whatever you want with it. And then you can, so just I just have everyone just to suck it up and the other thing is, we've got data on our side. I've got people that email me too saying, oh, my preceptor or my professor won't let me, recommend a dairy-free diet or something, and it's missing this and this nutrient or whatever. And all we have to do is go to the Journal of the Academy of Nutrition and Dietetics position paper that says a plant-based diet is safe throughout the lifespan and can be beneficial. That's from the head of all our organization, okay? So we've got that. We've got, the Kaiser paper that talks about, the benefits that all clinicians and employees and patients should be on a plant-based diet. We have data now. Go look at the Adventist Health Study. Go look at, Epic Oxford and all the data we have coming out there. And you give that to your professor, and maybe they'll listen. And if they won't, then you know what? Chalk it up and get through the program anyway, because then you could share that information with the world out there with the ability to be out there.
Fantastic. Well, I know you have to run. And I do appreciate your time. And I hope that maybe when your new book comes out, we can get you back on and discuss it.
Thank you so much for having me. And it's really nice to meet you. I'm glad you're out there.
All right. Thank you.
All right. Take care.
Bye-bye.
Bye-bye.
Well, I hope you enjoyed the interview with Julia. It was certainly a pleasure, and I can't wait till her cookbook comes out. I think if you have to look for things to take away from that interview, the one thing that I'll take away is the Food Journal. I think it's a good way to record what actually you're eating. I know there have been studies done that no matter who you interview, people omit about 25% of what they actually eat. So on just recall. So if you actually write it down as you go along, it gives you a lot more insight to what you're eating, and then you can look back and see just where you may have lapsed or got into oil or more fat than you thought you did, and you can redirect yourself and achieve better lipid numbers. It also makes you stop and think before you eat something, do I really want to write that down? An interesting thing in my office, I know I've mentioned it before, but I often ask patients, what did you have for dinner last night? Whether I'm trying to figure out why their blood pressure is high, or they tell me that, that they've been doing plant-based, but they're not losing any weight. And typically, I would say 9 times out of 10, people will tell me, you know, it'll be something that they really shouldn't have. And they'll say, of course, I don't eat that very often. So a similar thing happened the other day. And I, you know, just, you know, we'll keep trying. And I went back into my office after the visit, and the patient went out to check out. And I heard her telling my secretary, Terry, I knew she was going to ask me what I had for dinner last night. I should have said I had a salad, but then she would have asked me about that ranch dressing. So I just can't win. So I may have to change my tactics, because I think maybe people are going to start catching on. Back to that old vegan versus plant-based camp. You know, the more I think about it, the more, you know, I think people, both of these groups are in evolution. In the upcoming weeks, I'm going to have one of the co-directors from Cowspiracy, who look into the animal agricultural side of things. And I think there is a huge evolution towards more plant-based eating, for whatever reason, whether it's for ethical reasons, the planet reasons, or for health reasons. And I think it just would be a great thing if all these camps tried to help each other. It would lead to better health, better compassion, and a better planet. A week or so ago, I put a little mini poll up on Facebook asking if people would be happy eating a meal with meat versus spending time with their family and maybe having a meal that was not so spectacular. And I was kind of surprised that the importance that food had on how people would perceive that their happiness would be during a family group. It brought to mind to me one time when my daughter was, you know, going to one of her first junior high school dances, and there was a big push for, you know, who was going to wear a dress, and so-and-so was going to get a limo. And I got very upset with the materialistic way things were headed. And I told her, it's like, you know, you'll never remember 10 years from now what anybody had on, but you will remember the kids that you had a good time with, and, you know, all the laughs and the memories, but what you wear, you'll never remember. And I think that's the same way with eating. If you look back on gatherings over the years, it's not really what you ate, it's who you ate with and the people that you shared company with. And you know, the bottom line is, if, you know, if people look back, some of their best memories are times were maybe tough and they didn't have such a spectacular meal, but it was very simple and they really enjoyed the company of good friends. With the holiday seasons coming up, in my office, we kind of refer to it as eating season, because it is a time where people kind of fall off the wagon and start eating and maybe drinking more and getting into things, and they gain weight. And it's a difficult time as far as healthcare goes, because people actually end up in the hospital because of too much salt in their diet typically, and actually can put them into heart failure. But I thought maybe in the next couple of weeks during these podcasts, I'd give a couple references to some things that I'll be cooking for Thanksgiving and over the holidays. So we tried out a pie crust that was in the China Study cookbook by Mrs. Campbell. And that pie crust contained graham crackers and walnuts and applesauce and some unsweetened coconut. And it really turned out good. And we used actually an apple filling with some raisins and a few more walnuts. So that was a really good dessert. You could also use that for the base of a pumpkin pie. You know, the recipe does include nuts, but I think that, you know, for a holiday special dessert, the nuts are still better than, you know, processed oils or especially lard. So in the next couple of weeks, I'll start to talk about my Thanksgiving menu and some Christmas menu items that we have and enjoy every year. As far as endurance goes, I have a half marathon in December, and then we're going to do the Death Valley Marathon at the end of January. So that's kind of where what I've been training for. I'm still doing some swimming, and actually have joined a master's swim group. I kind of feel like a kid trying out for the swim team, and probably one of the worst kids on the swim team. I've had all kinds of fiascos with my fins falling off, my goggles getting stuck. I even made a flip turn and ended up in the wrong lane the other morning. So I don't know if it's a factor of swimming at 5:30 in the morning or just being intimidated by all the fish in the water. But it's been great fun, and I'm enjoying it, and I'm hoping to get faster swimming and to boost my cardiovascular endurance that way as well. I've started using the Mio Link as a heart rate monitor instead of the traditional chest strap, and I'm liking that a whole lot. I had the Mio Alpha, which was the watch and the wrist heart rate monitor, but it didn't sync to my Garmin. So this is just a little wristband that syncs via either Bluetooth and or ANT Plus to your Garmin, and so far that's working out really well. I'm not sponsored by them, but it's always like to share any kind of gadget that seems to be working, so I've been quite happy with that. I'm trying to do a little bit more heart rate training in either, you know, a higher zone or a lower zone, and try to eliminate some of this gray zone training that I'm so used to doing. So I hope you've enjoyed the podcast tonight with Juliana. I hope you check out her book and her blog. Some very interesting reading. She also has some recipes on vegsource.com, and I've tried some of those recipes as well. Again, if you want to reach me, I can be contacted at jamiedulaney@gmail.com. That's jamiedulaney.com. You can leave a review on iTunes if you'd like. So until next time, healthy eating, run strong.